Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
So we are back with a very, very, very special presentation of Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. My name is Dan Hurst. There's Mark right there. Wave.
I'm waving.
Mark Halleck is right there.
Hey, wave. Guys.
What's up? Very special show today.
Why?
You know why?
No. Huh.
Because today represents 1 year of our
one year
of Revitalize and yes, ladies and gentlemen,
no way.
Yes.
All right.
That's incredible.
That's awesome.
1 year.
Wow. That doesn't even sound canned. We started a year ago with no listeners.
Zero.
Yeah. Not a one. And we have swelled to like 38 now. So
hey, that's big.
It's pretty good.
We'll take it.
We'll take it. No, thank you. Thank you, thank you, for the thousands of you who downloaded.
Yeah, thousands and thousands of a
thank
month
you.
That
it
are
is.
Downloading.
And thank you.
We appreciate that.
We appreciate it. And it has grown from zero. Yeah. We didn't start with any, and we've done really no advertising.
No, that's for sure.
Well, we can't get any funding.
We don't.
Yeah, that's the problem. You know, but we do thank the North American Mission Board.
Yeah, don't be saying that. They pay for everything.
They pay for a lot. Yeah, that's, you know.
I didn't say that. Dan Hurst said that.
I will tell you this. Hmm? They pay for a lot without wanting to pay for a lot. But we're so grateful.
Now, this whole podcast is made possible by North American Mission Board, the Cooperative Program, the Annie Armstrong Easter Offering, and, you know, like our seminaries, like New Orleans and Midwestern that let us use their studios. We're grateful for that. And it's all an act of love for the local church and for churches that are declining. And thank you, Dan, for serving with us for one whole year. Thank you, Mark.
Oh, it's a joy.
For serving with us for a year. I look forward to many more years of doing this.
Yeah.
Really enjoy it. It's
such
one of the most enjoyable things we do. Yeah. And again, with really very little advertising, just by word of mouth, you guys have done a good job of making this really one of the top
podcasts. It's amazing how many of you actually will share this podcast.
Which is so helpful.
We appreciate that. It helps us.
Yeah, it's one of the top podcasts in all of America on church health and
revitalization. Well, what did you say? I mean, right now, downloads, I mean, we're getting a pretty decent turnout.
Of course, we're doing this. We're actually recording this one in late January, early February.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to freak people out.
Well, that's true.
We're not live right now in April.
Yeah.
But we ended the year with around 10,000 downloads a month.
Which, praise the Lord.
Which
man.
Is That's really,
awesome.
Really pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And appropriately, we are celebrating this one at the Spurgeon Library at Midwestern Seminary. They've been so gracious in allowing us to come here so many times for recording the podcast in their podcast studio.
Which is beautiful, by the way.
It's gorgeous, and we appreciate that so much. And appropriately, our topic today, we're following up on what we've been talking about in the last couple of podcasts, where we started talking about how do you assess when a church is ready to be revitalized. Then we went into the six keys a pastor needs for his congregation in revitalization. If you didn't catch those, you might want to go back and listen to those in previous editions. And today we're following up on all of that, and that is how to prepare for long-term revitalization. And that, you know, that we mentioned, we kind of closed last podcast with talking about this. There's a difference between vision and goals and visions and steps that you have to take. And so really what we're talking about today is when we say prepare, we're talking about action steps that you really need to take in what you're doing.
Yep.
So let's get into these.
And I think I love this topic because this really is our goal, is to help prepare pastors and leaders for long-term revitalization because it takes time. I'm hoping this will just be super practical for listeners. And so here's what we have to begin. Number one is this: accept the reality of the time it will take. And we talked about this.
There's no quick fix.
This is not a sprint.
It's not a sprint. Yep. And as we've said so many times, pastors, there are those exceptions where something happens and a church turns around on a dime. And it goes from, you know, being in deep decline to just blowing the doors off and growing in a year or two or three. And those are the ones that tend to be written about Those are the ones where the leaders of those churches tend to be asked to go and speak at national meetings and be platformed. And then we all sit there and say, well, that's not us. Because that's not the norm. And it's not because God can only do a few of those at a time.
Yeah.
It's because that he chooses most of the time to work through diligent pastors who serve over a long period of time. You know, I've often said when Moses accepted finally, reluctantly, God's call to go and speak to Pharaoh, it didn't go so well. It went worse. Pharaoh said, nope, you're not going, and you got to make bricks without straw, and the people hated Moses. And then he had to go through all the plagues and everything. And then, guess what? God, who hardened Pharaoh's heart, changed Pharaoh's heart. Like, well, why couldn't God have just done that, like, day one and saved everybody all this issue? Well, you and I both know God was teaching the Hebrews something about the extremeness of their captivity. He was teaching Moses about relying on him, not himself. He was teaching the Egyptians about the power of God. The time you're spending in this long-term revitalization is not wasted. God's doing something you may not even see this side of heaven.
That's right.
Something in your life and the life of the church and life of the community, it's not wasted. But just accept that the majority of the time, it's going to take a long time to be in revitalization.
Clifton, I think this is important. I'd love for you to share a little bit, too, because I think it's super encouraging, is not only is it will it take time, but give us the stats on, I think in some ways, like, what are we shooting for? I think sometimes we have a false, almost like a false picture in our mind that we're going to grow this church, if we're a success, to 300, 400, 500 people.
No, I think—
The reality is what? Numerically?
Well, yeah, contextually, you got to, you know, where's your community and watch, there's a lot, you can't, there's not just one standard deal, but the median Southern Baptist church is 67 in worship.
Yeah, 67.
So if you have 67 in worship, half the Southern Baptist churches have less than that, half have more. And I've got some other numbers here that are really astounding about the size of Southern Baptist churches. And I think we have to really move beyond the idea that we're going to grow to 250, 300. I'm here at Midwestern, and I love this seminary. And I'm so impressed with what this seminary has done in the last decade, what Dr. Allen has done. And they've been gracious enough to let me preach in chapel on numerous occasions. And so when I preach in chapel, one time I did, maybe twice, I don't remember if I said it both times. But, you know, maybe 400 people in chapel, I don't know, 300, 400, whatever, maybe more. I'm just using that as a number. I don't really remember. But let's say there's 400 in chapel. Basically, I say, you know, the 40 of you who will end up pastoring a church are more than 250, congratulations. I want to talk to the other 360 of us who will pastor churches of 100 to 150.
Yeah,
that's the reality we're in.
Right.
That's not a failure. It's not because God can't do more. It's because I believe God desires to use tremendous numbers of what we call normative-sized churches in every neighborhood, every town, every village. And he's gifted far more of us to pastor 100 people than he's gifted us to pastor 1,000 people.
Amen.
I love that. So I think accept the reality of how long it will take, but also accept the reality, it's okay not to break the 200 barrier.
Yeah, right.
I say that everywhere I go. Yeah. First thing I do when a lot of times I do these conferences, I just want to give that guy permission not to have to break the 200 barrier. Yeah. Now, I know there's a lot of guys out there doing conferences on how to break the 200 barrier. I don't see that anywhere in the New Testament.
Yeah.
I don't see that as I don't see that as a part of the Great Commission. I don't see that. I don't see any of that. We're supposed to make disciples.
Yes, amen. That's right.
That's what we're supposed to do.
That's right.
We're supposed to live faithful lives and teach sound doctrine and make disciples.
Yep.
We're supposed to love our community, love our enemies. We're supposed to be generous. We're supposed to live like Christ.
Mm-hmm.
You can break the 200 barrier and not do any of that.
Not do any of those. Yes, that's right.
So I just think we have to rethink what success is in revitalization.
I think it's important.
And it's not numerically growing. Yeah. It's making disciples who make disciples that result in community being noticeably better. At the same time, if you do that, there will be most likely some numerical growth. Sometimes there'll be incredible numerical growth.
Yeah.
But that's not your ultimate goal.
And why that's so important is because, again, we're talking here about long-term revitalization. Until you understand and believe what you just said, you could spend your whole ministry beating yourself up, being discouraged, feeling like a failure, rather than the joy of shepherding the people God has given you in that community.
Remember when Jesus sent them out two by two and they went out and great things happened? The demons listened to them. The sick were healed. And they came back, and they are just ecstatic. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are just reporting all these good things. And you're thinking, you know, maybe Jesus would say, yeah, hey, you know, let's hear more stories. Mm-hmm. Hey, Bill, tell them what. Hey, John, how about you? Hey, Carl. There wasn't a disciple named Carl, but you know what I mean. Hey, you guys, how about you guys? Tell us, give it up.
Yeah.
Look, there's nothing wrong with rejoicing in what God has done. Mm-hmm. But Jesus saw what they were doing, and he said, stop it. Don't rejoice that the demons responded and the sick were healed. Don't rejoice in the results.
Mm.
Rejoice that your name is written in heaven.
Yeah.
And I would say to pastors, quit rejoicing in the numerical results.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there'll come a time when they're going to go down.
Right.
Your church is not going to get numerically bigger every year between now and the second coming. Mm-hmm. That's not physically possible,
yeah.
Right? There'll come a time when you're not going to have that growth
yeah,
year.
That's right.
And if your whole sense of joy and purpose is we're bigger this year than we were last year,
yeah.
What happens when you're not bigger next year?
Uh-huh.
And I'm talking, look, I don't think there are any mega church pastors who tune us in. Okay?
No.
They're not saying, I want to hear yeah. what that Clifton guy says about, most of them aren't listening. But Rainer, they do listen to Rainer. And Rainer has made it clear to me and to others that through his research, mega churches, many of them are this is a difficult time for them
yeah.
because they're not getting bigger and bigger every year
yeah.
for a variety of reasons.
Right.
Mainly because baby boomers are dying off and baby boomers are the ones that like the big churches.
They like it, yeah.
So the culture has changed. Yeah. And also the expense of those buildings has gone through the roof. A lot of those mega churches that were built in the 80s and 90s are now 30 and 40 years old, and the capital improvements they need is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they're very expensive.
Yeah, we're there.
Church.
Yeah.
So the point of all that is we don't – that's not – you cannot make growing numerically your primary sense of success.
Yeah.
It is making much of Jesus, making disciples, loving your community – and realizing, I say it all the time, and maybe people they probably get tired of hearing me saying it, but I don't have that much longer to live, so you won't hear it very much longer. I didn't mean that. I don't have a disease or anything. I'm just saying I'm old. I didn't mean that. People go, oh, yeah, Mark. No, I don't mean that. That sounded terrible. But, you know, I do say I'm one flu season from heaven.
Hey.
So, you know, it could happen. But so I won't be saying this much longer. But everywhere I go, I generally do say I've never pastored a church of more than 150.
Yeah.
And that's probably stretching it, you know.
Yeah.
It probably counted some people twice to get to that number. So I've never pastored a big church, if you call that a big church. And I came to terms with that a long time ago and said, that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm great with that.
Right.
God's got things for me to do. I don't have to pastor a big church.
Yep.
It doesn't – my sense and there's so many wonderful things you can do in a normative-sized church.
Yeah.
And we have so many normative-sized churches. If they would just become disciple-making places,
amen.
It could be so helpful. So that's accept
good.
The reality. It's going to take a long time.
Yep.
And accept the reality. You might not break the 200 barrier.
Yep, that's right.
The most active – now, I'm talking about having grown up on the mission field. I can tell you that – participated in
not everybody
this study.
Knows because I realize we – excuse me for interrupting, but we don't always introduce ourselves. I mean, Mark is the pastor of Inglewood Church in Calvary Church in Inglewood, where he took a dying church and God brought it back to life. And they have a network of about 30 congregations now.
Amazing.
And Dan, his mom and dad, raised him in Honduras, IMB missionaries. So you were talking about being on the mission
field.
Yeah.
So growing up in Honduras, and I got to participate in this study of which churches were the most active growing churches. And they used the word success, which I hated that they used that word. But but what we discovered was it was the smaller churches with a congregation of less than 75 that were most successful because they were mobile, they were smaller, they didn't have a hierarchy that they had to answer to. They could get out there and get the job done and do it. And they had the resources, human resources available because they had people who wanted to be a part of that. Whereas in the larger churches, it was a struggle finding people that would really jump in there and be a part of what was going on. So what would happen is these small churches, there was a number of churches that I worked with that had five, six, seven other mission points. They referred to them as mission points. And those mission points were 30, 40, 50 people, see?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was just constant. So you're talking about one church that was basically 75 people that was actually pastoring 750 to 1,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that strategy was, we don't need to be bigger, we need to be better at ministry and disciple making.
Right, wow, exactly. And so one of the things we say from the revitalization replant team at NAM, one of the things I've said since the very first day they hired me is we have to value the normative-sized church, and we have to value the church of 100, of 50, of 30, and know that God has a plan for every church.
That's exactly
and,
right. That's
man,
exactly
and then,
right.
So accept that reality. All right, number two.
Make certain, and boy, I love it when you guys get off on this. Make certain your family's on board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how to prepare for a revitalization. Mm-hmm. Man.
It isn't so much all the planning and the strategy and the committee meetings and so those come. Yeah. But boy, if your family's not on board.
I remember what Dr. Rayner, and I did learn so much from him, and I owe a great deal to all the time I got to spend with him. One of his favorite phrases that it just comes to me so often, don't undersell this to your family.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make it easier. Don't make it sound easier than it's going to be because you don't want them to be afraid of it. You undersell it. In fact, oversell it. Tell them it's really going to be harder than it is, and then if it's not as hard, it'll be better. Yeah. I mean, make sure they know.
Yeah.
As we're going to a revitalization,
there's a cost here.
Yeah. And even though these people say they want to change and they'll follow our leadership, they mean that. But they're not really going to be able to do it right away. And there's going to be some angst. There's going to be some challenges. There are going to be some spiritual warfare. Yeah. And let your wife know it's going to be really hard, and then it's going to get hard, and then it may be the hardest thing we've ever done. Mm-hmm. And let your kids know that.
Yeah.
Make sure they understand the cost. Not, oh, honey, this is going to be great. They want to change. She may look at it and go, man, that church has been declining. I know, but they said they want to change. Yeah. Look, they got a great building, and there's a lot of opportunity here. That's overselling it.
Yeah.
You've got to – am I underselling it? I can't remember
what
I'm
saying. No, I know. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's underselling the reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you want to –
You want to sell the reality for what
it is.
You
don't want to overpromise and underdeliver.
Overpromise and under – yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So make sure they're on board.
Yeah, that's good.
And we talk about it in church revitalization. We talk about spousal – what do we call it?
Perseverance. Yeah.
In church planting, we call it spousal cooperation.
Mm.
You say, is there a difference? Maybe. My wife has been a church planter's wife, and my wife has been a church revitalizer's wife. Mm-hmm. As a church planter's wife, there's got to be spousal cooperation.
Sure.
She's got to be on board with me.
Mm-hmm.
We got to do this together. No way. We can't not do it together, number one. But in revitalization, it's more than cooperation.
Yeah.
It's perseverance.
That's right.
Because it's going to get really hard.
Really
and
good.
I would bring one other thing into this, and that is not we talk about the spouse and everything, but your children. You know that you're heading in the right direction when your children start praying for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when your children learn to pray for your ministry, they're on board.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an important part.
So good. And to invite them into that.
Yeah, absolutely.
To invite them into that.
And to thank them for that.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to say this, though. Again, number one, accept the reality it's going to take time, and accept the reality it's not about growing numerically. But number two, make sure your family is on board. Don't undersell the difficulty to them. Make sure your wife is aware it's going to take spousal perseverance. Make sure your children are on board. But also, when you talk about your family on board, make sure that they also understand this is for a long haul and help their expectations meet reality. It's not going to turn around quickly. It may get harder before it gets easier.
Mm-hmm.
It may be 3, 4, 5 years. And one of the ways you can help your family be on board is be cautious about how much you unload on them in detail.
Mm-hmm.
How much you unload on your wife
absolutely.
In detail. Look, I've been married a long time, and I've been in ministry a long time. I still have to struggle with this. Sometimes I want to come home, and I just want to take all the frustration that I'm feeling and just throw it over on Jill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she wants to know what's bothering me, and I need to share with her, right?
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't need to know every conversation, everything somebody said.
Right.
I'm called to be the under-shepherd, so the Lord has anointed me with that,
and
He'll give me the grace to deal with it. She's not called to be the under-shepherd, and she will not necessarily have that grace, and she can't do anything with it once I lay it on her or our kids.
Right.
So you got to be careful about that.
Yeah.
The dose of reality for the kids is true, making sure they're on board is true, but that doesn't mm-hmm. mean they have to share every pain you're sharing. You've got to be intelligent about how much you share with them and how much you don't. And that's another podcast for another day.
What if we do this, guys? So we've hit the first two. What if we hit the next three on the next podcast?
Oh, well.
Does that work okay?
Yeah, that's
we're
about
out of
time.
We'll kind of be a surprise here and just wait because I think there's some good stuff coming up.
Yeah.
But by the
it's
way,
it's about time we had something good. Yeah. This podcast has been on a year. I've been waiting for a good episode.
By the way, let me wrap this up with talking about family, making sure and having a spouse that really understands and gets it. You talking about you going and Jill wants to know everything that's going on. And my wife is like that a lot also. But my wife has learned a genius way to deal with that sense of being overwhelmed and just struggling with people. And I'll come home and I'm obviously depressed or, you know, down about something and everything. And I'll want to talk and I'll just want to unload on her. And she says, I've made reservations. And that pretty much says, we're going somewhere. We'll, you know, we'll get away from it. You know, we can talk about this later.
We're
switching gears here. So
we're going someplace.
We've got reservations. That's all right. We're going to come back and finish this up then in our next episode. And I hate to use the word episode, but
when you're our age, we do have episodes.
One. It has, you know.
You know, you got to worry about Dad. He had an episode last night.
That's why we have medicine.
That's right.
And thanks for listening. Thanks once again for helping us get through 1 year. That's just amazing. And let's see if I have a special little. What do I have? No, that's birds. That's not what I want. What's this?
Crickets. Yeah, cricket. That's what we get. We get the sound of crickets from our.
Oh, there we go. That's never mind.
I still have a cricket.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor, or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.